Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
Beautiful flowers back there. Do you know how to grow
orchids? In the mountains. Yes.
Okay, so you offline, you're going to have to tell me, because I'm telling you, I'll kill an orchid, and it won't come back. And they say it's not rocket science. They say you just put an ice cube in there, and maybe give it a little food every 6 months, and it'll come back.
We bought ours from a place up north in North County, and this lady grows them, and she said just to give them water once a week and put them in some light like this, and that's it. No ice cubes. That's not enough water, I guess.
Wow. Well, you're enough water. You are overflowing. Yes, you are. Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains here. This is the spot. This is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. We got my neighbor. She's up in the mountains up in Alpine, California. This is Karen Donahue, and we are going to talk about the ups of downs. Down syndrome.
Right.
The possibility that your child might be born with this, and how they can live a productive, happy, fulfilled life, even with some of these challenges. We're going to talk a little bit about Karen's life and some of the things that she's experienced and what she's doing to pour into people and be an advocate for others with Down syndrome and their parents. So welcome to On the Edge, Karen. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much. It's a nice sunny day here in Alpine. I'm so happy about that. Although you are correct, we do need some rain every once in a while, more than once in a while.
We need rain.
But I'm good.
I love the rain. I love the rain. The rain is just,
me too.
It's beautiful. So Karen, tell us a little bit about you, your life, and how you show up in the world.
How I show up in the world in my life. Well, okay. So currently I'm 65 years old, proudly, and I was born in Connecticut, transferred out here to California, 1967, June of 1967. And I was born to a mother who raised us mostly as a single mom. And let's see, we lived in LA County for a little while, and there was five of us, so I had three siblings and two brothers, and I'm the eldest. And so it was a rough ride at first growing up. My mother was a single mom, and she was an alcoholic, and so she was a rageaholic too. And so things didn't go very well between her and I. I guess I found out later in life I was born out of wedlock, but my father, who I thought was my father, married my mother and later told me I wasn't his. So there goes the ire.
I think about that sometimes. And I know that people really have a hard time with that. But sometimes that could be a blessing, because your father could have been a rageaholic too. And this person stepped into your life. Was he a good stepfather?
You know, my father, who I thought was my father, I thought he was a good man. He just had alcoholic problems too. And between him and my mother, who had alcoholic problems, they didn't do very well with each other. And that's how we ended up in California, living with my grandmother and my great aunt, who were dynamic, short women, tiny women I could put in my pocket.
Wow. But they packed a powerful punch. So as you progressed,
growing up with them, I was afraid to do anything bad.
I know. Let me ask, can I ask you some, kind of intense questions?
Yeah.
Okay. So you had two alcoholic parents. We'll look on your mother's side. Did you ever have a problem with substance abuse?
With substances like, the typical stuff, like snorting stuff up your nose, I think that only lasted 2 weeks. And I got a clue about that. Right. Never smoked pot. Didn't like that. But drinking has been one of those kinds of things where it was a binge type of thing once in a while. Once I started drinking after I had my kids, basically, I started drinking once stuff started happening to me. And it was a binge type of thing. But my younger sister died of alcoholism at 50. She made it to 50, and 2 days after her birthday, she died. And the rest of us, you know, we don't really have a problem with drinking.
Because, so, you know, I would say that it's a gene that, you know, it can be in your family that's, you know, it can be genetic.
I do believe that. I think my sister, you know, because she died of it, that was her genetic predisposition, and she fulfilled it, unfortunately. So, yeah, it's a sad kind of gene to have.
It is. My mother used to say, why does it make you act so ugly? Why can't it just make you act like a nice person and mellow you out? I don't know what it is. And it's like Native Americans. You give alcohol to Native Americans and it just takes them from a flicker to a flame. It's just something in their body, in their DNA, in their bloodline that does not gel well with alcoholism.
Well, I think they did better with peyote, which I think, as far as I'm concerned, peyote was probably, you know, what we know as cannabis. So they did better with cannabis than they do with alcohol.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's a native herb. But then too, I think about cocaine. It used to be the coca leaf, where they would just pull the leaf, eat it, cure whatever ailment they were. A couple of buzz, and then somebody figured out how to make it synthetic, turn it into powder, and now it's a whole big mess. So as you
I've had that in Peru. I had that in Peru to help me with the altitude. Mm-hmm. We went to Peru, and the altitude was too much, and I got some coca leaves from the Peruvians, and actually did help.
Well, the Peruvians are onto everything, because I've got some people that have been on my show that are there now doing ayahuasca, which is that psychedelic drug. And now they're trying to get mushrooms legal, like marijuana. You know, it's just, just make the people even crazier. But again, that's where medicines come from, and they come from plants. So I get it. So as you progressed in your life, you fell in love and had a daughter. Tell us about your beautiful daughter.
Well, I actually had four children. I have two, a son and three daughters, and one particular daughter, that my third one from my first marriage, ended up being having Down syndrome, and I was 24 years old at the time, about to be a single mom because my husband left me for the next door neighbor.
Wow.
Surprise, surprise. We were only married six years and in the Navy for most of that, and he was out to sea a lot of the time. So if you think about it, I wasn't really married that long, and had three children by him. And, you know, so I did not expect to have a child with a disability. What I expected was what I had the first two. They came out normal, beautiful, you know, perfectly little munchkins. And the third one, as soon as I had her, I knew something was different, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. Until
Down syndrome is not something that they can detect during blood tests, or they can?
No, I don't think so, but definitely they can sometimes misdiagnose it through an amniocentesis. There's a country, I think one of the Swedish, Finland or something like that, where they're doing amniocentesis as a requirement, and if there's any indication whatsoever of any kind of disability, that is aborted. So there's a book out called The Last Person with Down Syndrome. And it talks about the mess about abortion and how certain countries are requiring that their folks get an amniocentesis and make sure there is no disabilities, because the government doesn't want to pay out for any kind of disability.
Well, you know, let me tell you something. A woman's body, I said, brains, whether you agree with me or not, it's her right to choose.
Right.
And, you know, now that's not the case. Now they're trying to, you know, take us back to the Stone Age, where a man is right. going to dictate, and he's got some women believing that. Whatever your yep. choice is, you have to make that choice. There are other right. countries that are a little bit more progressive as to giving you choices and options. But along those same lines, there are some people that want to have their children. My neighbor has a son with Downs and had another baby. Both of them have Downs. Tell us a
no
little
way.
Bit. Yeah. Tell us a little. And her sister has a baby with Downs.
No way. That's definitely family history then.
Yeah, it is.
Genetics.
It is genetic. So tell me a little bit about when you realized that your daughter was special.
You mean as far as soon as I knew that she was Down syndrome?
Right, right, right.
Oh, please. The way that I was told that she was Down syndrome was so very undiplomatic and unkind. My husband, who was separating from me at the time, you know, I was in this private room all by myself, wondering what's going on. When am I going to see my baby? And he comes in my hospital room and I'm by myself. There's no other people, right? And he comes in and says, we had a mongoloid. And I was like, what? And he just said it like that. And he goes, well, you know, another word is Down syndrome. And I was flabbergasted. I hadn't heard that. I've seen people with Down syndrome in Virginia when I was stationed with him. I always say that I'm stationed with him because when you're in the Navy and you're a Navy wife, you're stationed.
That's right. You're right. Absolutely right.
So you might as well be in the military too. But anyway, I'd seen a group of people with Down syndrome in Virginia and it was amazing. It was an amazing group. And that was the only thing that I could recall when I had my child and my husband told me that. And then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, a group of doctors came in, students, various specialists came into my room and crowded my room and told me that my daughter had Down syndrome and that the possibility of her dying was imminent and I had to transfer her to another hospital. And I, of course, you know, they said, do you want us to do everything we can to, you know, save her? And I was like, what? Why is that even a question? You know, of course I right. do.
Okay, well, I'm confused. I'm confused. Is it that people that have Down syndrome are prone to have a shorter lifespan?
You know, especially in the 1980s, well, and before, I think, you know, doctors have been educated and obviously morally as well, that Down syndrome people can live a long life irregardless of their medical conditions, as long as you get the right doctors that are on your side and with it enough to be able to get you to specialists that can address the various disabilities or health, you know, importance that they usually have. I mean, and people with Down syndrome usually have different abilities, different health needs right off the bat. And some don't have any, you
really?
Know, they just
okay,
come out, they're Down syndrome, they're in great health and nothing's going on. Like I have a couple of friends from my experience with the school district, because I worked as an aide. I have a couple of friends who have very healthy Down syndrome people. Nothing happened to them when they were born. They just had the regular features of Down syndrome. That was it. Then there are other people that have all kinds of issues, you know, esophageal issues, gastro issues, heart issues, you know, vision issues, all kinds of issues. And my daughter, the first 2 years of her life, she had all kinds of issues. Not as much as other people's children, but she had quite a number of issues. She had a heart issue. She had gastro issues. She had bladder issues. She has a vision issue, atrophy optic nerves, which means that she's basically almost blind, legally blind. And she had ear issues, auditory issues. I mean, and then as time went by, she started growing out of those issues.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that your medical bills, well, you were a military spouse. He still had to cover the medical if he was still in the military.
Well, when he out of the Navy, that stops. So when he left me, I had to go on welfare. So, you know, thankfully we had the kind of government where we have Medi-Cal, you know, when you're on welfare, you know, government support, then all her stuff was covered. And thank God.
Thank God, because I can't even imagine. But what wasn't covered was the time and the attention for you and your other three children. Did you have a challenge with the other three children? You know, well, your daughter was the third child?
The third of my first marriage. And then my second marriage, I only had one child with her, and she ended up having diabetes. But I think the first two children, I don't think they quite got, because they were young, you know, the severity of Christina's issues until they, you know, were older.
How did that play a role in the dynamics of the household? Because I know you was probably pulling your hair out.
I have lots of hair, but yeah. You know, I had a little bit of help because there's an organization called the San Diego Regional Center, and it's throughout California, and they help people with disability, you know, parents and families with people with disabilities, children with disabilities. And so I had a little, if it wasn't been for them, I wouldn't have been able to have a little bit of babysitting, a little bit of free time that didn't cost me any money, but it was limited even then, because you only had so many hours that were given to you for free time to be able to take a break, you know. So the San Diego Regional Center, that represents, you know, all of California's people with disabilities and their family, is a godsend and a blessing. So, you know, they ended up helping me, you know, various times to just get a break and have free time for myself, and even babysat the other two kids, but I had to pay, of course. Yeah. And the other thing that happened too was Social Security, you know, it's SSI, kicked in for my daughter immediately. So I had a little bit more financial help besides, you know, welfare. So, you know, welfare was bad enough, but then when you have a child with Down syndrome, you know, your needs are different.
I'm going to agree to disagree with you on that.
That's what do you mean?
Welfare. When you say welfare was bad enough, it's not a bad thing.
I understand
what you're saying. No, I understand. Well, not enough money, absolutely. But people get on other people about welfare.
I know.
We all pay taxes. And I pay taxes, and I've never had to use a social service. But heaven forbid that I do. They're going to want me to sell my property. They're going to want me to, they're going to go up my, you know, my butt like a colonic for everything that you have, you know? So if you are able to help somebody and you have to go on social service, don't feel bad about it. Don't feel bad about it. Don't abuse it.
No, I didn't necessarily feel bad about it, you know, because it wasn't really my fault. It wasn't something that I wanted to do, but because I had young children and
that anybody really wants to do, but it is a resource that's available to them. You know, nobody had a problem getting all of these government stimulus checks when they were handing them out. They didn't have a problem with that. But when somebody needs assistance and they need food stamps, you know, there's a shame associated with it. So there shouldn't be a shame associated with it. You don't know why. There's no way in the world you could have worked a job and took care of four kids, and one of them with severe special needs. Talk to us a little bit about the Down syndrome again. You know, your daughter, does she need help, you know, being bathed and clothed? And because she had all these other complications.
Well, you know, she, from the very beginning, she had all these health issues. We had to always go to the doctor. She had a few surgeries. She had a heart surgery, which was very traumatic. She had bladder surgery. She had eye surgery. Her cognitive function. Oh, she also had, seizures from the time that she was 4 months old until she had her heart surgery, which that was interconnected. It was another problem that was a rare congenital issue with her heart that I intuitively asked the heart doctor about, and he found it. He found an issue and was able to, you know, she would have died. Basically, you know, she lived any longer with this seizures and this issue, this heart issue, she would have died. So, I mean, she had some pretty major health issues. And then as she got to be three and a half, she started going to infant stimulation programs and started coming out of stuff. But she was more prone to colds and ear infections, and upset stomach and, you know, various things. And it was hard. It was hard. I think it was hard the first 5 to 7 years of her life. And then she started growing out of a lot of those things and picking up. You know, when she started going to school, she was more active. She was more verbal. You know, she was coming into herself.
So now where is she at now? Because I hear she's doing some great things. She's living on her own and stuff, right?
She's living with a group of 90 other individuals with disabilities out in Spring Valley, in California, not too far from me, about a half hour. She lives there because it's called Noah Homes. And she lives there because I found out about Noah Homes, put her on a waiting list. And they built a couple extra homes for people with memory issues, you know, like Alzheimer's and dementia. So instead of farming them out to nursing homes, they keep these people and put them in these little memory homes that they have. And that freed Christina up to be able to move into there because she was in a group home for about 17 years. And then I took her back because she wasn't flourishing. I had her again for 2 years from 2015 until 2017. And that's how I found Noah Homes. So I had her, I had a wonderful time with her, but now that she's in a group with her peers, she loves Noah Homes and she loves being with me. I take her on the weekends, you know, once or twice a month, and she can't wait to go back to Noah Homes. It's not that she doesn't want to be with me, but she's with her peers that are,
right, you know, she's with her peeps. She's with her tribe, you know, and
that's right.
Well, and I say that people with disabilities or challenges, they are locked in their own world. It's a different world.
Right.
It's not the world that we experience. You know, people that are visually impaired, they're more, you know, audible. They listen more. They taste more. People that are, you know, without legs, it just depends on where they are. So they feel comfortable because they can understand, they can relate. They're not judged. There's not a bullying. Because you're with your people. So I don't blame her.
Right.
Bravo.
She's not very talkative, but she's very kind. She's very gentle. And she loves to love on people, you know, and they just love her. Everybody loves Christina at that place. And they embrace her with open arms like she'd been gone a month and she's only been gone a weekend.
Well, look at that. You wrote a book, When Down Looks Up, One Mother's Story of Personal Crisis to Divine Purpose. Tell us what's inside the pages of that book, Karen.
Well, the book, I wanted to start with how I started in my life just briefly. So it's just a pie section of my whole life. Somebody else told me they're in this book. It's just a brief description of a certain section of my life with my child with Down syndrome. But, you know, I should probably write a bigger book about the rest of my life. So what's in this book is a little bit of my before Christina and a lot of after Christina was born. And Christina's my daughter with Down syndrome. Now, you'll hear people that say, my Down syndrome child. Well, that's not right. My child, because she's a child first, with Down syndrome, right?
Right.
So the way that we talk about people with disabilities or different abilities is very important. It's not about being politically correct. So my child is a young woman with Down syndrome. And
it's so hard for everyone. Once we get introduced to that, then we can move forward. But a lot of times people become very combative, thinking that we're being disrespectful. You'll call a little person a midget and they just go crazy.
Yeah.
You'll call you'll call a kid now he or she, and they're non-binary. They go crazy. So it's a learning curve. So I'm hoping that on both sides of the spectrum, allow that space to learn and to be taught and to teach. You know, this is a teachable moment. This is an opportunity to raise the frequency and the level of someone else's understanding. And then we can move forward. And then there won't be that misunderstanding or communication problem. So you write this book. What did your daughter think about it when you told her?
My daughter doesn't really understand that this book is about how she came to be and how we both came to be throughout my life or our lives. And she doesn't really care. But my other three children, they have mixed reactions. They have mixed reactions because obviously they were there too. So, and I don't name any names because I don't want anybody to be shamed. So their names aren't necessarily, I don't name them by name. I just say my son, my daughter, and this and that. So I just wrote this book to focus on Christina and the trials and tribulations, as well as the positive impact that people with Down syndrome have and that she's had in my life and that she has on my friend's life. I mean, you know, it's not just who she is or what she is and who she is. It's the impact that she has on society. Mm-hmm. It's the impact that she has on my community. It's the impact that she has on my church community. It's the impact that she has on even her community that she lives in at Noah Homes. Mm-hmm. So,
to have huge. I see a lot of people with Down syndrome, they're flourishing. There's a brand new Gerber baby that has Down syndrome. There are a lot of couples. I had another lady on my show. Her daughter married a gentleman with Down syndrome. They're living happily ever after. There's a fashion model that has Down syndrome. So, you know, people are looking at the physical altercations of their, you know, their face or whatever, but that has nothing to do with their abilities or their heart. Again, like you said,
you know, and the other thing is, it's not how they look, it's how they are as a person. Right. They're still a person. Mm-hmm. And people with Down syndrome have varying degrees of abilities and talents and purpose. And you know, they fill out the rest of our lives, you know, with purpose. And, you know, and they give us the ability to think outside the box, you know what I'm saying? To think outside of ourselves. Right. You know, every time I go it used to be when I'd go somewhere in the store, somebody'd say, "Oh, she's so cute. What's her name?" And then they ask me her name and I tell them, they go, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And I'm like, "What's there to be sorry about?" I always thought that was so funny. What's there to be sorry about?
They don't know what to. They don't know what to, again, it's a learning curve. This was an opportunity for you to teach them to say, hey, you know what? Just because you can't judge a book by its cover, you have no idea.
And I always welcomed, I always welcomed questions. I wanted people to ask me. I was open to whatever they wanted to ask me, as long as they weren't very insulting, which, you know, some people are just, you know, they're just live small lives. And yep. unfortunately, you know, they say or do mean things. But most of the time, I think I've, Christina and I have been received very well. You know,
well, I believe
and,
you know,
and nobody's going around saying mongoloid anymore. The history of mongoloidism was a very not so nice one either. They used to name people with Down syndrome mongoloid because there's a certain ethnic group from Mongolia that the only reason that they could hop on the word mongoloid was because they resembled those people from Mongolia. And that was kind of cruel.
On back both sides. Before. Yeah, on yeah. both sides. On the person that has a disability and the prejudice against the Mongolian individuals. So,
yes.
Are you in support of a group now? Tell us a little bit about how to get in contact with you and the groups that you support.
You can get a hold of me through my, by one, by buying my book, because my book has the information in the back.
Okay, so what I want you to do is I want you to put that book up. Give them a minute to get their eyes on it, brains. Take a look at this. Put that up there. That is beautiful. Is that on Amazon?
That's on Amazon. It's on Kindle. It's on, you know, it's book form. And I think it's, I don't know if it's audio, but yeah, it's on Amazon, Walmart, Barnes and Noble.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Various other books, books, you'll be able to find it definitely on Amazon though.
Okay. So again, how to get in contact with you, Karen?
Well, you can either contact me. I have acknowledgements in the back, resources in the back, for instance. Well, let's see, in the back of this, it has my Yahoo, Kedsop1 at yahoo.com. I'm on Facebook. I have a Facebook page for myself, and Christina's plastered all over it. And I also have a GoDaddy, a GoDaddy page. Which I think it's kind of difficult. I need to change it. But if you get a hold of me through my email, then I can refer you to my page better. I can't.
So, Brain, that's what we want to do. We want to connect and support Karen Donahue and also Christina. Because you never know what you don't know. Be a blessing to somebody. Maybe you can donate. Maybe you can volunteer. Maybe you can raise your level of sensibility and education on something that you don't know. Maybe you can educate your children instead of your kids pointing a finger. Explain to them that, you know, everybody's not perfect.
That's an excellent point, because I have grandchildren that are 4 and 6. And I finally introduced them to Christina, which technically that's their aunt, right? And they asked me all kinds of questions about her. Why can't she do this? And why can't she do that? And why does she look this way? And why does she talk this way? And this, that, and the other. And, you know, I was able to put it in a way that made sense to them, because, you know, kids are into superpowers, you know, and different powers and at that age. And I said, Christina and her friends have superpowers.
That's right. You know, they do.
Have powers that we don't have, that makes them special, that makes them unique. And even though you think that they can't do various things, they still have powers way beyond what we can do. So that made sense to them.
Absolutely. Well, you made sense to all of us. I'm trying to find my postcard so I can tell everybody where we are. We're here on the edge right here, brains. Me and Karen. Thank you so much, Karen Donahue, for sharing your story, your passion, and your purpose at Christina's story. If you have a child with Down syndrome, know that there are resources available to you. reach out to
That's
Karen
in my
and
book.
let her know. And in the back of the book, there is a lot of information. I need you to like, love, and share all the information that you find here, right here on the edge, so that other individuals such as yourself can be involved. Thank you so much, Karen. You have been such a blessing to us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Bye, brains.
Thank you.